Strokes touch many families at some point, and depending on the severity of the stroke and how quickly the patient gets treatment, there can be some good outcomes, but there can also be some serious and long-lasting effects on the whole family. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. I'm going to learn about stroke prevention today, about detection and recovery, and we're going to also hear about a great opportunity for stroke survivors and their caregivers. And two guests for you today to start the show. Dr. Luke Bradbury is a vascular neurologist with the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics. Prior to that, he completed his fellowship training at Wake Forest University, had residency at Vanderbilt University. And Dr. Bradbury, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it very much.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
Chris Welly has been with us before. We've had some conversations, she and I. She's an advanced practice nurse who coordinates the UW Comprehensive Stroke Center, and she helps organize Wisconsin's stroke camp for survivors and loved ones. And Chris, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Larry. Nice to be here.
Oh, thanks so much for joining us. Strokes, let's go basic right off the bat. What is a stroke?
So there's sort of two major types of strokes. There's bleeding type strokes where one of the blood vessels in the brain will break open and then bleed into or around the brain. And then there's what we call ischemic strokes, and those are the lack of blood flow strokes. It may be because a blood clot travels from either one of the arteries in the neck or the heart up into the brain and then blocks blood flow to a certain part of the brain, which causes the symptoms that we're going to think about later. And then, or it's a local problem in the brain where some of the smaller blood vessels get sort of plugged up over a long period of time because of things like hypertension and high cholesterol and smoking and that sort of thing. So,
yeah.
So basically, it's when a part of the brain doesn't get the right amount of blood, and then that part of the brain can die. And that's sort of the bare bones of a stroke.
And the warning signs?
You know, it's hard because with a lot of strokes, there aren't a lot of warning signs. Sometimes people have what we call TIAs, or transient ischemic attacks. And they used to call those mini strokes, but we try and reserve the word stroke for when there's brain damage done. But a TIA can happen when, for a brief period of time, there's an interruption of blood flow that's restored. And so those last, you know, maybe a couple of minutes or up to, you know, 20 minutes or so. And then that can be a warning sign because that helps us recognize that there are some untreated risk factors we need to address. But sometimes with a stroke, there is no warning sign. It just comes out of the blue and the problem starts and is worst at the very beginning. And that's when the stroke is happening. So
mm-hmm. What the person might notice is some difficulty with their balance.
Yeah.
It happens suddenly. We always say stroke strikes suddenly. So
yeah.
It's a sudden change. Balance, vision, difficulty speaking or understanding what's being said. Their face might not be symmetrical. They put their arms out. It's not symmetrical. There's actually a little thing called BFAST we try to teach people so they can remember it.
Mm-hmm.
B for balance, E for eyes, F for face, A for arms. Can they hold both their arms up and are they symmetrical? And S for speech, can they speak and understand?
Yeah.
And T for time, call 911. And it's really important, too, to know when that started so that you can tell the people when you get to the hospital.
Mm-hmm. I had a young, I'm in his 50s, friend who had a stroke and drove himself to the hospital. He recognized what it was, and I said, "What are you thinking? You should have." And he said, "Well, he just did it."
Mm-hmm.
But you want to get there quickly, for sure, but...
You want to get there quickly, and we always tell people to call 911 because sometimes the stroke can start mild, you know, with mild symptoms and then worsen. Mm-hmm. And if you're with an EMT crew, who are trained in recognizing stroke signs or symptoms, but can also intervene quickly if your symptoms get worse on the way to the hospital, it's so important to be in the ambulance. And the other advantage is that the ambulances, you know, particularly around here in Madison and even, you know, out in more rural areas, they're also trained. They know if they see a stroke, they don't just take them to the hospital right away, but they call ahead, and so they tell us at the hospital there's a patient with stroke signs or symptoms, they're coming in, and then we get ready. So as soon as they hit our door, we're doing what we need to do to help this patient get better.
I want to give our listeners a chance to call in, and I didn't do that to begin with, so let me do it right now. You may have questions about stroke. Maybe you had one, or maybe a loved one had one, or maybe not, and you just have questions about signs and what's going on in the way of research. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. That's our title of our Facebook page, and certainly we'd love to hear from you. Again, the number is 1-800-642-1234. Now, I understand there are some new recommendations for treating a stroke. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Just this last February at the International Stroke Conference, which a lot of us went to, there are some great new studies that were published and kind of announced to the public. And we have about 25% of the strokes, and these are some of the worst strokes that people can have, involve a big blood clot that goes to some of the big arteries in the brain. And we now have a new technique where we can insert a small catheter that goes up into the brain, and then it expands a little stent, just like they use in the heart to open up coronary arteries there. But it puts a stent through that blood clot, and then they can pull that clot out. And this is a new technique that happens. And we can do it very quickly and very efficiently as soon as they get to the hospital. And so then we quickly restore blood flow to that part of the brain. And these studies that came out, and there's now about three or four of them that have been very positive and shown very good results in getting that blood clot out of the brain. And so really, it's only been happening for the last couple of years, and now we have the studies to show that it works. And it's very important that people get there quickly. But this is exciting because some of the worst strokes that people have, we now have much better, aggressive ways to treat them and make the patient better.
So. Oh, that's really, really good news. Well, you know, on the in terms of care, once there is a stroke, there's a lot of challenges for those who are helping the stroke victims, Chris.
Yeah, you mean once they're discharged home. Mm-hmm. Right. It's a whole change in lifestyle. And I think that's part of why we have a support group called Fresh Start that meets in Fitchburg. That's why we have this stroke camp to try and help people as a family come together and do what we can resource-wise to help them. Also, there's rehabilitation facilities that they can go to. We have a couple great ones in our area. We're very fortunate, and they're even building a new one.
Well, let's talk about that Retreat and Refresh Stroke Camp, because I think that is really a cool idea. And it's been going with some great success.
Oh, yes. Actually, last year was our second year in Wisconsin, but for the nation, it was the 100th stroke camp. So mm-hmm. strokecamp.org, they have a website for national. You can go to a different stroke camp anywhere. But we just started them in Wisconsin a few years ago. This will be our third this year in Green Lake, September 9th through the 11th. And people can sign up on the website. We have a few spots left. It's just a great way to have fun and be with your family and just not have the typical worries that you have every day. So people are there. We have pampering to wait on you and help you get your food. You know, just the little things that make and just to have fun. Just the little things to make life normal.
And Green Lake's a wonderful venue for something like that, for sure. Now, how long does the camp last?
It goes from Friday around noon or 1 till Sunday at noon. So, and everything's included, your meals and everything for like $125 a person. You get everything.
Oh.
And if people really have challenges financially, there are scholarships available.
So, and who can attend?
Anyone who's had a stroke can attend with their family.
And plenty of support staff there, I'm guessing.
Yep. We have, we're matched one for one. There's 20 stroke survivors and 20 volunteers. The other thing, people can, you know, you can bring your wife or your son. We don't do a lot of hands-on care, but we mm-hmm. we do help.
And I'm taking a look at the calendar with all the photos from last year, and boy, people are having a lot of fun. Lots of smiles.
It is mainly fun. There's a couple breakouts, which the caregivers really enjoy, where caregivers get to talk to each other about some of the struggles they face, and there's a lot of bonding. Actually, a lot of people have become really close friends from attending stroke camp together.
Okay, so that's a real benefit. What, as you look at it and think about it, what are the big benefits from this thing?
Yeah, I would say, we had one of our survivors who said it's fine to use his name, Joe. He started his own camp after this. His good friend came to us and said, "I can't believe how he's a different person after going to stroke camp. Now he looks at what he can do and not what he can't do."
Oh, that is wonderful. And I just want to get in, and we'll mention this again, but how do you sign up for this, or where would you contact to get?
The best way is to go to the website strokecamp.org.
And strokecamp.org. We probably have that up on our Facebook page, too. I will, as a matter of fact, Elizabeth Delaquest just told me that we do have it up on our Facebook page. So if you go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, you can just click. You'll find it right there. We'll give it to you.
I'll get a phone number too. Sorry, I don't.
Yeah, we'll get that up. We'll get that. Elizabeth will help me out. Chris in Park Falls has a question for us. Chris, let's go to you. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Hey, I've been wondering for a while. I live out in the middle. I live out in the middle of the North Woods in Wisconsin, and I was wondering if your guest had any ideas of what somebody who is single that depends upon a volunteer response. Mm-hmm. Lives out in the country. If you know, it takes them maybe 20-30 minutes to respond.
Yeah. And you know, this is a problem that we have, in that, you know, we want to get people to the hospital as quickly as possible, to a hospital that also is trained in dealing with strokes. And, you know, but the reality is, you know, in places like yours, Chris, that people live just a time distance away from the hospital, or it takes that long to get the volunteers out there. We're working on improving, you know, trying to get better EMS coverage, you know, to different rural places. But one of the big things that we've done over the last several years that UW also participates in is what we call telestroke. And so there's lots of small hospitals around, for example, up in the North Woods of Wisconsin and in more rural areas that don't have stroke doctors. They just have small ERs that maybe don't have the resources like a big university hospital in Wisconsin does. And what we can do is have telestroke, where I can log into a computer with a webcam mm-hmm. on it, and I can actually look at and examine the patient in that rural hospital, and then help the ER there make the correct decisions about whether or not to give a medication called TPA to try and break that clot up, whether to have them flown to a hospital that has more aggressive stroke care. So how we can reach out to those rural areas and provide better and more time appropriate stroke care is something we've made a lot of steps on. So mm-hmm. telestroke is very important for that.
So in the meantime, I shouldn't be driving myself.
No, I would still call 911 because I've seen several patients where maybe the symptoms are mild, you get in the car and start driving, and then suddenly you can't move one side of your body, or suddenly you have you lose your vision, and with that it could obviously cause a bad traumatic accident and make things worse. Yeah. So we really do recommend waiting for EMS to get there, knowing that unfortunately there are some places where that takes a while to happen.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There were some studies done in California that actually show that it takes an hour longer to be seen if you show up in the mm-hmm. waiting room than if you come by ambulance.
Yeah, and you know what? Some emergency medical services also have a protocol where if they find someone with a bad stroke, they can actually stop on the side of the road, call the helicopter to come and pick them up and take them faster to a hospital. So there are protocols in place that try and get people who live out there, not near a hospital, to one faster. So
mm-hmm. awesome. Thanks for your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Chris, for calling. And just a shout out and an attaboy and attagirl to all those volunteers who, mm-hmm. In those areas, who really, frankly, do a heck of a good job. Mm-hmm. I mean, as good as they can under the circumstances.
They certainly do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's wonderful. Tim in Superior, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Yes, I had a stroke at the age of 35. That was 3 years ago. As a right dissection in my carotid. And I have random numbness in my left palm and rest of my hand. I was wondering if that could possibly be a TIA, or if that's just something I'm going to be probably living with for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. We should go back and explain what a TIA is.
Sure. A TIA is what we call a transient ischemic attack, and it's where for a brief period of time there's not enough blood flow to a part of the brain, and that can certainly cause symptoms like hand numbness. And let me ask quick, Tim, you know, when you say, sure. sometimes when we say numb, we mean either there's a lack of sensation, like when you're at the dentist and you get Novocaine, versus a pins and needles kind of paresthesia is what we would call
pins
that.
Pins and needles.
Pins and needles.
I think I still have feeling.
Mm-hmm. Good. So, and that probably is a little bit less worrisome for TIAs. Often when you have, you know, like a very common cause of hand tingling is something like carpal tunnel syndrome or, you know, when the nerve in the arm is bothered for some reason. And so it may not be TIAs, although it could be, you know, and if it's in your left arm and you had the right carotid artery dissection, is that's what you said?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that could be related, and so you know it's not a bad idea to probably you know see your doctor and get a good neurological exam, make sure that you know the blood vessels are still open and flowing well, you know, so it could be TIAs and probably something that wouldn't be a bad idea to get checked out.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks for calling. And Chris, you were going to add something.
I was just going to say that. 35-year-old is not as uncommon as it used to be to have a stroke, and thanks, Tim, for pointing that out. And I think that there are a lot of people that come to our camp who are 35 to 45, actually, a fair number, although we have all ages. We've had some 5-year-olds. We've had,
wow.
Yeah. And people who have hemorrhages sometimes don't think of themselves as having strokes. So if they've had a brain bleed, that is considered a stroke. So those people are welcome as well.
Talking today with Dr. Luke Bradbury and Chris Welly from the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics. Chris is the advanced practice nurse, coordinates the comprehensive comprehensive stroke center. And she helps organize Wisconsin Stroke Camp for Survivors, and Dr. Bradbury, a vascular neurologist with the University of Wisconsin Hospitals. I'm Larry Mueller. Elizabeth Deliquist, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Part of the stroke camp that we've been talking about involves perhaps a little boating, and just to remind you, at 11:45, we're going to be talking about paddling and summer paddling with Darren Bush of Rutabaga Paddle Sports. Right now, of course, talking about strokes and stroke camp with our two guests, Dr. Luke Bradbury and Chris Welly. Great to have them along. And again, if you have a question, call in. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Go to our Facebook page. You can post a question there at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the Facebook page. Shane in La Crosse has a question as well. Hi. Shane, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Love your show.
Thank you.
I had a question. That was... Hello?
I'm sorry. We lost your voice there for a second, Shane. Could you repeat what you just said?
Yeah, sorry. I had a family member... quite a long time ago that had a pretty severe ischemic stroke. And I was wondering what kind of research, I know when it comes to the brain, there's sometimes not a whole lot you can do. Sometimes that damage is just permanent. But what kind of research is being done in the area of trying to repair some of that damage?
It's a great question, and something that we're still sort of struggling with is once the damage is done, what can you do? Now, there's a certain amount of what we call neuroplasticity. The brain, the areas around that stroke can sometimes pick up some of the work that was being done by the part of the brain that had this stroke. But, you know, when we're talking about long-term recovery, there are some, you know, there's some research being done into stem cell therapies and other things like that. It's a little early yet, I think, to expect any good results. And, you know, the last time I checked just about a week ago, I didn't see any active enrolling stem cell therapy for stroke studies going on in America right now, although there may be some that I just wasn't aware of. But that's one of the challenges that we're still struggling with is, you know, once that brain is dead, those nerve cells inside the brain really can't come back to life again. And so it's something we need to do a better job of. And I'm hoping that someday the stem cell therapy will bear that out and actually improve you know, some function there. But we're kind of a ways off from that right now.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Shane.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Tori in Appleton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on there. My question actually goes right along with Shane's. I was thinking, you know, it's been a while since we found out the brain is plastic and got that principle of neuroplasticity. So I was just wondering if there have been any advancements or how that has evolved with the research in stroke prevention or stroke care.
You know, the neuroplasticity kind of comes into more of the post-stroke care that happens, and we have some excellent rehab doctors at UW and other places locally, and a lot of the research into neuroplasticity is sort of done on that side of it. Once that stroke damage is done, how can you best allow the brain to use that neuroplasticity to recover and gain some of the function that was lost back? And so there's a lot of rehab studies that go on and trying to figure out, you know, what sort of therapies are best with physical occupational therapies. And then there's also, you know, of course, speech and swallow therapies that are being done to try and improve those aspects. So it's really happening on the rehab side of things, especially in that acute after the stroke period, the first couple of weeks and months afterwards, how to enhance neuroplasticity. There's not right now a whole lot of great medications, but I think we're researching more into that and trying to get better, exercises and things like that, and figure out how to stress the brain in order to help that neuroplasticity happen and recover.
So. I'm trying to remember now, I just did a show not too long ago about some research going on with UW hospitals and with medical engineering staff on stimulating
the tongue.
The tongue.
Oh yeah, that's a great tool for people who have speech trouble and swallowing problems, especially swallowing. They strengthen their tongue by exercising, and that helps their swallow.
Yep, and we're still enrolling in that study too. I just had a patient yesterday in clinic that's under in that trial there. So,
and how would you enroll for that?
Usually, the patients who are a candidate for that, we identify them, you know, while they're in the hospital, and then have our stroke research coordinators talk with them and get them enrolled in that study. So, something that we try and catch them early to start that therapy soon.
Very good. And Tori, thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Teresa in Hortonville. Hi, Teresa. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I have a question. I had a stroke at 45 5 years ago, and my only symptom was that I went suddenly blind. I had none of the other symptoms at all, and I did have a history of loss of sight with migraines, so that's what I thought it was at first, although the blindness was way worse than I had had with the migraines. And so it took an MRI 3 weeks later to show that I actually had a stroke. What I'm wondering is why isn't blindness listed as a sign on any of the information regarding, for people to be able to detect a stroke? And also, how common is this as a symptom?
Well, difficulty seeing is considered a symptom, and so that blindness is considered a problem.
Difficulty seeing.
Yeah.
When we talked about that BFAST acronym earlier, and it used to just be FAST, where you do a face, arm, speech, and then time. And now we've added that for this exact reason, that sort of B beginning where with balance and then eyes. And that can be both blindness, like you're describing, or double vision is another common cause of, common symptom of some types of stroke. So this is kind of brings the point up that there are certain syndromes in stroke that, you know, aren't typical. You know, the brain is a very complicated organ, and sometimes it takes a while to get to that diagnosis of stroke. And, you know, it certainly vision loss is one of the more complicated ones that we're faced with. So it can happen that way.
The other thing that's complicating is that you have these complicated migraines, and that's a real tricky one. And so when we talk to people who have migraines, they actually have a higher incidence of chance of having a stroke, because they have some of these symptoms, sometimes it can just be put off to their migraine. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important to be familiar with the symptoms of your migraine. And if you're having the type of migraine that seems different, it's not like your usual migraine, then that's when you should be concerned about stroke. Mm-hmm.
And there you go. And from past shows, when I've talked about with doctors about heart attacks, they've always said oftentimes women will respond differently to a heart attack than men. Is that also true of stroke? Are Are women likely to experience different kinds of things than men in a stroke?
You know, it's not. The brain, you know, male and female brains are very similar in how they react to strokes. And really, depending on where the blood clot is, will determine, or where the bleeding is, will determine what the symptoms are. I think the problem is that because of things like complicated migraines, for a long time, we weren't recognizing some of the minor stroke symptoms. And like our last caller was saying, maybe it was sort of stroke wasn't as high on the differential list or what we're considering could be the problem. And we need to do a better job at that. We need to, obviously, if there's neurological deficits or stroke signs or symptoms, to recognize that in women just as we would in men. So
there we go. Thank you so much, Teresa. Appreciate your call. Dante in Green Bay, go to you next. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for having me.
What can we do for you?
I had a question about the likelihood of me having a stroke. My dad and my aunt passed away in their 40s not too long ago. They were both overweight. me, I'm just turning 30 this year. I try to be healthy. I lift and work out regularly. Would them having a stroke increase my chances, like hereditarily?
You know, that's a great question, and something that we get asked, often in the hospital with family members who are there. And there's we kind of have to touch on some of the risk factors for stroke. And there's what we call modifiable risk factors. That's things like, obesity is one of them. Hypertension, if you can get on medications to, lower your blood pressure. Cholesterol, there's good medicines to lower cholesterol that can help it. Smoking is a big one. So, obviously that's something you can stop doing to reduce your risk. But there are non-modifiable risk factors that are maybe inherited things that can raise the risk of stroke. And so it's important, if you have a family history of people having strokes at young ages, to be aware of the signs and symptoms of stroke. And if you experience them, go to the hospital right away. But it sounds like if you're being active, healthy, you're not smoking, you're doing what you can to keep from, having a stroke yourself. See your doctor on a regular basis, get your annual checkups so they can do the right labs and preventative things. So that's the best you can do right now. But there are, certain risk factors that run in families that can raise your risk of having a stroke. So,
the other thing is, Dante, lifting is not necessarily as aerobic. An exercise might not, it's a good exercise for your body and your muscles, but you want to make sure you get aerobic exercise in.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much again for calling. We had another caller who couldn't stay on the line but wondered about the Fresh Start support group that we were talking about earlier, Chris, and who can attend that support group, and how does it work?
Well, it's called Fresh Start Living Well with Brain Injury, Stroke, and Aneurysm, and anyone who has had a brain injury can actually attend, because we feel like there's a common thread in brain injury. People have a lot of the same experiences, and it's at the Fitchburg Library on Lacey Road, and we have it at various times. So the best thing to do is call us, 264-4698 in the 608 area code.
608, what is it again? 264
4698.
4698. That's the number to call for.
Yep.
For the support group.
Our next one will be August 20th.
All right. Good question.
6:30 to 8.
Okay, yep. Good.
Also, for the stroke camp, I have a phone number. It's not an 800 number, but 309-688-5450.
Okay, 309, what is it again?
688-5450.
5450. And I think we'll probably get that. If we don't have it up, we'll get it up on our Facebook page as well. So if you don't get that written down, go to our Facebook page. The title of that, The Larry Mueller Show. Sharon in Appleton up next. Hi, Sharon.
Well, hi. Thank you for taking my call. This is so exciting. I did hear your show, Larry, a few weeks ago when you were talking about that researcher at Madison with the PONS machine, P-O-N-S.
Yes.
Mitchell Tyler.
Yes.
And I just wanted to elaborate on that because I know your guest talked about the tongue and exercises of the tongue, but this was actually a little electrical stimulator that went inside the mouth and stimulated the tongue. I think they were doing it 20 minutes, three times a day, And yes. they found that there was a nerve connection between the tongue and the brain, and those electrical impulses via the tongue was actually healing and regrouping the brain. And your guest, Mitchell Tyler, was talking about how they had people who haven't spoken, not in just weeks or but years. And sometimes decades,
yep.
speaking again and even singing again. So I just wanted to make sure that people could find that link again, because when you Google Pons Machine and Mitchell Tyler, you can even get then the podcast from your older show and all the research that they've done. And it was an incredibly exciting show you had.
Yeah, it was, and I'm glad you called, Sharon, and you must have paid good attention, because that was a great explanation of what that show was all about. Thank you so much. And Dr. Bradbury, are you familiar with that research?
You know, I think that might be a little bit different than the one that we were talking about.
Yes.
It is, but, you know, that is very exciting, and, you know, I really hope that research bears out and shows some very good results in the future. So.
Yeah, it's showing some fantastic results so far. But more research on the way. Sharon, again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I guess there's a lot out there, because I think this one is more swallowing related with Dr. Joanne Robbins. I'm not sure.
The one here at UW. Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm.
But great.
Yeah. Thanks again, Mark in Green Bay. Your turn next. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Hi there. I have two questions. Can anxiety manifest symptoms that are similar to a stroke? And also, is there any correlation between empty cella syndrome and strokes?
Okay, can anxiety cause stroke-like symptoms? Let's put it that way.
That's an excellent question. It's something we deal with, you know, frequently on the stroke service. We're understanding more about how one's mental health affects the physical health over, you know, and throughout the entire body. And there's a, for example, something called what we call conversion disorder. And what that is where emotional stress sort of manifests itself in physical form. And we can have patients on the stroke service that have signs and symptoms that are exactly like a stroke, with weakness, trouble talking, vision changes. And we realize, and this is what we call a diagnosis of exclusion. So we do scans, we examine the patient, that it is more related to anxiety and depression and things like that. And so we're learning more about that. But, you know, that's just one example, conversion disorder, that does look exactly like a stroke. Sometimes it manifests itself like a seizure or other neurological problems. So the answer is yes, they really can. And often it takes some work to get to the bottom of that, you know, the appropriate brain scans and testing and exams and you know, physical exams. To really work that out. But yes, it can. So the empty cella syndrome, you know, I'm not aware of any increased stroke risk with empty cella syndrome. I don't think that it does.
What is that, by the way?
The cella is a certain, you know, sort of area near the brain, and an empty cella is when you do a scan, you realize there isn't, it's sort of not filled up as much as you would expect. And I don't think that raises the risk of stroke, not that I'm aware of, at least.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mark, thanks. Joe in Watertown, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I had a quick question for you. When I was 35, I had a stroke, and when the paramedics came and got me, they called ahead and told them that I was having a stroke. I got sent in right away at the emergency room for an MRI, and then a couple hours later was sent home for a migraine, and I was misdiagnosed. My general practitioner looked at the MRI, sent it for an independent evaluation, and sure enough, I had a stroke, ended up with a 98% blockage in my carotid artery that I had surgery for. But I was wondering, how often do they misdiagnose them as, like, migraines and other things?
Yeah.
Well, obviously more often than we would like. You know, we'd like to always identify strokes and treat them as early as possible. And, you know, we 35, this is a bigger problem we have with younger people. Like Chris was saying earlier, there are, certainly strokes at all ages, and we don't do as good a job identifying strokes in younger patients because there is a lot of other causes of those same symptoms, and so we need to do a better job. But I think that's happening less now. I don't know how long ago you had the MRI or had that stroke.
But I'm 43 now.
Okay.
So you know, it took me about 5 years to recover then after being misdiagnosed and having to wait to get surgery.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And, you know, and the the scanners that we have now, too, I should say, the MRI scans are much stronger. They're better at identifying early stroke. So I wonder now if you had the same scan, the same situation, if it would be easier to identify that stroke. I hope so. You know, at one of our telestroke sites now is in Watertown. And so this is something else that's going to be helpful is not only would the ED doctors be able to evaluate you, but they would call us and we would be able to log in and have a stroke specialist do the exam, look at the scan, and identify hopefully more people that maybe have, you know, try and separate what we call the stroke mimics versus the true strokes and identify them and put them in the right category quicker.
Very good. Thanks, Joe, for calling. Appreciate it. And let's turn to Sandy in Reedsburg next. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. I have a question. I saw some research on brain lesions and incidence of stroke. I happen to have brain lesions. I don't have MS, but I have increasing small brain lesions. Have you seen that correlation between lesions and stroke risk?
Hard to say, you know, so exactly what, when we use the term lesion in neurology, basically it just means that there's some injury and there's some problem there and what exactly that is. Sometimes it's hard to tell. A lot of times we'll get an MRI scan and we'll see lesions, what we call small vessel ischemic changes, where it's not quite a stroke, but there's some changes in the deeper structures of the brain that are the very small blood vessels are maybe having some trouble. And certainly the more of those you see, the more you worry about vascular health. So for example, we see more of those lesions in people who smoke, people have diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and those are all very typical, you know, risk factors for stroke. And so addressing those risk factors and trying to lower them as much as possible is important. But yeah, if we get a scan and we see more of those lesions, it's possible that the stroke risk is increased as well.
So then what do you do some kind of prophylaxis? Would you ever do a blood thinner or just an aspirin, or
Yeah, you know, it really depends on what those risk factors are. So, for example, if you have diabetes, you know, being treating aggressively the diabetes is important, taking blood pressure medicines on a regular basis and making sure that stays within the normal range. But maybe an aspirin every day is helpful in preventing. It just depends on the particular risk factors that patient has. So.
Mm-hmm. Sandy, thanks. Uh-huh. Appreciate the call. And Jenny in Cottage Grove, your turn. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. I just had a quick question. I was just wondering if you guys could tell me what the likelihood of a stroke is in kind of each age group. I'm 20, so I doubt I would have a stroke. I was kind of wondering what the likelihood is in each age group.
Okay, so Jenny's 20 years old, wondering about the chances of a stroke in 20 years, old people, and so forth.
Well, I can't tell her about age groups specifically, but women have a 1 in 5 lifetime risk, and men have a 1 in 6 lifetime risk. More often, you have men are more likely to have stroke in younger years, and women in older years. I don't know what you want to add something to that.
This is going to be the sort of the risk increases as you get older. Your stroke risk at the age of 20 is incredibly low, although we do see it. And so, you know, again, it's important if you have the symptoms of a stroke to go to the emergency department right away. Usually in younger people, the risk of stroke is due to things like tears in the carotid artery. We've already heard some callers that have had that, you know, injuries to the neck vessels or cardiac abnormalities. Maybe there's a structural problem in the heart, but it's still very, very low. And then, for example, in the much older age group in the 70s and 80s, there's a syndrome called atrial fibrillation, an irregular heartbeat that is a very high risk for stroke. And that gets more and more common as we get older. So it's sort of a linear increase. The risk of stroke is very low in the 20s and lower in the 30s. And then as you get up to the 70s and 80s, it's much higher. So it's sort of a gradual increase. I don't think that anyone out there who's younger should be worried about having a stroke, but just, again, be vigilant with your symptoms. And if you have them, come into the ED.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jenny. Thank you very much for calling. And as we kind of wrapping up here a bit, Chris and I want to go back to Stroke Camp just to remind people that there are some great opportunities here.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Tell us again, it starts...
Starts September 11th, mm-hmm. Friday, around 1 o'clock, and it goes until Sunday morning, maybe Sunday at lunchtime, and they leave after lunch. Great food, great fun, great people, just all kinds of activities, really worth checking out. And you can learn more at the website, strokecamp.org, or by calling the number.
And there's still openings. And this is at Green Lake, Wisconsin. And Green Lake is a wonderful place.
And it's in that building that's like the historic building there. It's beautiful, really, right on the lake.
Yeah, it's just a beautiful place. Well, I want to thank you both so much for being with us. I hope we'll have a chance to do this again. I appreciate your time very, very much. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Luke Bradbury is a vascular neurologist with UW Hospitals and Clinics. Chris Welly, advanced practice nurse who coordinates the UW Comprehensive Stroke Center, and she helps organize that Wisconsin Stroke Camp for survivors and loved ones. So it's a chance for both, and the price is really right, believe me. And they may be doing a little paddling as part of their efforts at Stroke Camp. And speaking of paddling, my old friend Darren Bush of Rutabaga Sports is up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.